The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
We're back. I'm Drew. That's Roth. It's a jingle I stole from Fox. How you doing, Roth?
I'm good. You couldn't see, it's not a visual medium, but I was doing a Cletus the Robot air guitar dance while you were doing that.
Ages and ages ago, when I was working for KSK, I wrote lyrics to the Fox theme song.
Fuck, do you remember them?
Yes, I do. You want to sing it?
Yeah, do I? Yes, very much, Drew. Please.
We're going to do this because, and I don't think it's, I think it's on NBC. I don't think it's on Fox tonight. But by the time this posts, it'll be the night of the NFL preseason opener between the Broncos and the Falcons, that
so
rematch
stupid.
of the Super Bowl we all love. Maybe the most exciting Super Bowl ever. But my lyrics were, it's time for football now on Fox with giant robots with big cocks, and graphics that go womp and whoosh, and Terry Bradshaw's still a douche. He's still a douche.
Is that how, so that's obviously very good, thank you. How did you imagine the vocals going? Was it like that, or did you have like some sort of like Ronnie James Dio, like it's time for football, like high metal guy?
I want the late Ronnie James Dio to do it.
Yeah.
Holy diver!
Love that shit.
That would be perfect. Yeah,
I got a Dio t-shirt at a yard sale when I lived in Brooklyn. I was a younger person. I could have gotten away with wearing a bunch of things, but I felt like it was stealing valor. It just sat in my drawer for 2 years, and I gave it to Goodwill.
I remember when I was a kid, I listened to Dio, and if you turn the Dio logo upside down, it said devil in an ornate metal font.
Yeah.
And I was like, wow, that's so dangerous.
My parents must never be told.
Yeah, it's just a fucking joke.
I know. Like,
well, this
all
is now
scary metal guys of our youth. Like Ronnie James Dio was like the same size as Danny DeVito.
Yeah.
Like it's a scary dude.
They're all Trump voters now, too.
It's yeah.
Like, Dave Mustaine being like, you gotta look at InfoWars.
Just
all completely out of their goddamn
yeah,
minds.
Sad.
Anyway,
yeah.
To that end, the NFL preseason's opening, and I will watch the game for 3 minutes.
Yeah, whatever. As long as there's guys playing whose names I recognize,
I want to see Drew Locke play a little bit. I'll watch him play 2 series before completely forming an opinion on him that I will continue to have throughout his entire fucking career. And I'll be like, well, he's just not accurate because he missed 2 passes
against
the Falcons the first time he ever took the field.
I'd love to say that I actually am only going to watch those few minutes. I feel like every year my track record with this is saying that sort of thing or like planning some other thing that would involve not watching it. And then I wind up watching it and being like, it's like the last time I see Timmy Chang play or something like that, where I was like, oh yeah, he was on the, wasn't he on the Seahawks for 15 minutes in 2006, and I watched him for some reason? But I don't know. Maybe this is the year I break that cycle.
Yeah, it'll be weird for me this year because I stopped drinking. I had to stop drinking because of my injury. But I can indulge in other delights.
Oh, nice.
But, like, I would put on preseason football as, like, wallpaper for my drinking. You know what I mean?
Oh,
like,
yeah.
There was nothing else on TV. I didn't want to watch Lord of the Rings on TNT for the 90th time. Like, it's just like I put on sports to have it be there, which is really good actually for soccer in the morning.
Yeah.
But like I do it with baseball now. Like I did it with the Nats game last night that they lost like 38-0. And so I'll do that sometimes with preseason football. But if I don't know if I will have the tolerance if I am jacked up on, you know, a bunch of sativa.
I think you got the, yeah, I was going to say, it's about the right strain, right? Because like, it seems like nothing could be more background music than preseason, the first preseason football game.
That's true. I
like,
mean,
that's
sometimes...
just like a Chuck Mangione record that has been like administered copious amounts of sedatives. That's like the football version of that. You're just kind of like hearing something percolating in the background. You should fall asleep several times during the game if it's working right.
I mean, what I like to do is I like to flip over to like Shark Week and stuff like that. But, you know, like a lot of times, like I'll see something, like I'll be stoned out of my brain and I'll see something is on Discovery Channel and I'll be like, oh, I get to look at nature and like pretty fields and stuff like that. But it's almost always a turnover. I turn to it and it's always just some guy talking on camera, inevitably. Yeah. Like it's not nature. It's just some guy being like, bro, there are fish out there, bro. And it's like, this isn't what I signed up for.
Yeah. That's the thing that I often flip over to if it's on is it's Triple D, little Guy Fieri in the mix.
It's a good show.
It's a good show, but it is the sort of thing like, I think it's easier to appreciate, not that I've ever like consciously like sat down and like, had a little bowl of popcorn and watched an episode end to end on purpose. But if you're watching like something that is kind of like, a, you know, even for me, I care about the Mets, but that's a very lulling sort of experience. It's just watching an endless procession of soft infield pop-ups.
Yeah, you know, that sounds about right.
But then you change over and there's like a guy that's got 9 rings on being like, unbelievable tamales, bro, and like just all in your face. Like it's the energy level keeps you awake, but it's like if it's like just every now and then if someone just slapped you.
I'm going to hit this with some fucking garlic.
When the food looks good, I appreciate the show. But when the food looks like kind of shitty, when it's like some place that's like serving him something in like a white styrofoam like clamshell thing, then I really appreciate him more.
Like I do it, too.
I don't enjoy looking at him. I never have, and I don't imagine that that I'm going to change on that. And I really don't want to know what he thinks about like politics, for instance. But he's a very generous guy with people that are just kind of like, you know, making things wrong or whatever. And he's like, fried manicotti, never had this before. Like, oh, well, that's got a lot of cheese in it. But he's very good at giving those sorts of like compliments that would be like plausibly deniable if he was ever asked to testify to them under oath.
Yeah, that sounds about right. Yeah. This is an opportunity for me to say, as we record, this is my final day as a GQ correspondent. And of course, one of my favorite assignments was going to meet Guy Fieri and to profile him in a profile that I believe turned hipsters back in favor of Guy Fieri after they had been conditioned to hate his guts. So I believe that I am the reason that there was a backlash to the Guy Fieri backlash.
I think the show was always good. It was the restaurant that was the problem here. But then, yeah, like he was, I don't know. So would you, now that we're looking back at the GQ era, very briefly, because I know you don't actually want to do this, but I'm curious.
No, I'd,
who are the, of the all the people that you had to spend time with for that, which Guy Fieri, you got your Duck Dynasty boys.
Yep.
More recently, can we mention that Stephen A. Smith is like, that's a thing that you did?
We can may or may not all mention right. it. I offer no comment on that, Ross,
all right, fair.
At the moment.
Who are the your favorite people that you got to spend time with? Like, go ahead, like, that you enjoyed?
Well, because they all know they're being profiled, right? So they're all on pretty good behavior. Like, my first assignment there, my first big boy assignment there that got me my job was Justin Bieber. And even Bieber was, like, you know, sort of, like, guarded and... He was nice, perfectly nice to talk to. We didn't have much to talk about because, whatever, I'm a middle-aged dad and he's Justin Bieber.
Right, not that much shared experience. You can be like, I peed in a mop bucket one time too when I was younger. I don't do that anymore. My kid's 11.
But otherwise, everyone's super nice. Like, you know, I met Chris Pratt and shot guns with him and he was nice. And Guy Fieri was super nice. And by the way, speaking of him, when I profiled him, he said he makes a point and you already certainly intuited this. He does not say mean things about the restaurant on the air. Like he is from, if he's trying a dish on the air, he won't say this sucks or anything like that.
Yeah.
He is from if you can't say anything nice, don't say anything at all, whatever. So, but you can watch the show. You can watch a show now and tell when he doesn't like something because he'll be like, you use cheddar there, huh? Like instead of saying something nice, sometimes he'll say like, that is awesome. But other times he'll ask a question about the dish, and that's how you know He's like, well, yeah. This sucks, but I have to fill airtime.
Yeah, so. The camera's rolling. So he's got like tears streaming down his face, and he's like, am I tasting paprika?
Yeah, yeah. That's exactly it. I got a note of donkey sauce in here. And, you know, I have his number, and I never found out if he hated the piece or not. I always kind of wondered.
Did you keep it in your phone? I feel like if you get a number like that, you have to keep it in your phone.
I have kept it in my phone. I have his number in my phone, and I have Pratt's number in my phone. And after Jurassic World opened, and this was after I had profiled Chris Pratt, I texted Chris Pratt something like, wow, that's a big opening, or just something completely inane and stupid. And he never texted back. He didn't give a shit. So I was like, I was like, me and Chris Pratt, we're buddies. We're not buddies.
We texted. Well, I texted. Yeah. It's all right.
I remember I was at his house with his wife, who at the time was Anna Faris. He's since gotten divorced and is either remarried or reengaged.
So Arnold Schwarzenegger's daughter, right?
Yes. Yeah. And Anna Faris was like, we should all be friends. And I was like, yeah, we should. And I left the house and I was like,
I was going to suggest that myself.
Yeah. And I was like, she probably says that to every reporter. So I was like, shit. Let's come back and talk about football.
Okay.
We'll come right back.
Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, what's your secret? Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
We're back. Hey, your team sucks. Let's talk about, I got six teams on the docket that suck.
One of them is my team, too.
One of them is your team. So let's go through them quickly. The first one is the Oakland Raiders. And of course, that was the one where I was, you know, loaded for bear since last October to write that fucking thing.
Yeah, God. So that one, I guess, was a matter of probably holding back, right? Like, I feel like you must have had, like, just a tab open with, like, a Google Doc that you were just periodically having Raider thoughts and adding sentences to.
No, I'm not smart enough to do that.
All right.
Everything is filed into my head during the season where I'm like, oh, yeah, I got to remember that. And some of the stuff is, you're not going to forget it. Like, I'm not going to forget that they traded away Khalil Mack, you know?
Yeah.
I'm not stupid.
I don't think anybody is going to forget that they traded away Khalil Mack. But,
and it's just killing me that yesterday Gruden started up to a press conference and was like, I'm liking this Nathan Peterman fella.
God, it is. Peterman is, you can see there's like a push happening too. There were a lot of like football knower guys on Twitter that were like, you know what? He's a lot better than you think he is. Like people,
that was
what tape did you see? Like he played three quarters. All of them were just like watching a man fall down the stairs and catch on fire.
Yeah, he got a job in the NFL. He's probably pretty good at quarterback in general.
Right. Like if your point is that he's a better NFL quarterback than say me, then yeah, like point taken, granted, cheerfully withdrawn. But like it's been so obvious that Gruden wants him to be the guy. And I don't understand it, but I don't have to understand it. I feel like if I fully understood what John Gruden wants and why, I would go mad.
Yeah, and let's face it, it would be a far more entertaining season for us outside observers if he actively went and benched Derek Carr, poor Derek Carr, in favor of Nate fucking Peterman.
Oh, God. Just a hazing incident. Yeah, so that I felt bad because that, as gratifying as that moment was, that happened like a week after their piece went up. And I was like,
yes,
I feel like
right.
You would have had to reorganize the whole thing. So maybe it was good that you didn't have to. I believe you shouted out Mike Glennon instead of Peterman, possibly in the story. Is that right?
I called out Peterman. And in fact, I predicted what I said Gruden would say. This is my prediction. I quoted him. I'd said that he would say, I'm really liking how this Peterman is slinging it in practice out there. And what he said just a week later was, this Nate Peterman is growing on me.
Yeah.
So what? So that's close enough.
Yeah, it definitely suggests that if nothing else, he skimmed the story.
Welcome to our podcast where I take credit for everything that's ever happened.
I think
ever.
It's good. You're like, first of all, Chris Pratt's friend. Second of all, John Gruden pretty much gets most of his lines from me. I think I saved Guy Fieri.
This is a note from Colby. He wrote in, by the time the Raiders are rid of John Gruden, one of Philip Rivers' children could be quarterbacking each and every team in the AFC West. I loved that.
Yeah, well said.
It was dead on balls accurate, too, because Gruden... Because Gruden's going to be there till 2028. I mean, contractually.
Where are we all going to be in 2028?
Dead. We'll be fucking dead, man.
What's Las Vegas going to be like in 2028? How hot is it going to be?
Oh, my God. Have you ever been there?
Yeah. Yeah, a couple times when I was in college. I've never been there as somebody that had more than $40 in his pocket, so I don't know that I've had the actual experience, but yeah.
Yeah, it's not fun when you step outside the casino and like experience the air.
It's like just a hairdryer that never turns off. It sucks.
There's an old still from King of the Hill where Bobby Hill steps out of the car in Phoenix, and he says, and I'm gonna get the quote wrong, but he's like, how can anyone live here? This is an affront to God. And Vegas is like that when you step outside. Let us move on to the Bucks. It was amazing. We had a murderer's row of just terrible teams, which, because I go in the draft order, makes sense. But to go from the Raiders to the Bucks, there's no come down.
No.
Because you go right from John Gruden fucking everything up to the one team that still believes for some reason that Jameis Winston has it.
Yeah. It's the Bucks are also, it's weird. Like, not just that these teams are bad, there's something really annoying about them. Like, I feel like this is a good way for you to start, because it's not the sort of thing where you're like kicking the Bengals around and you're like, they just aren't very good and they make kind of mediocre decisions. Like, each of these teams has like a real hideous aspect to it.
Yes. And particularly with the Bucks and with Winston, because Winston,
yeah, that's
there's
the
never
worst.
Been, there's always these competing storylines where he's a shitbag. He never learns from his mistakes. He's always just gross. He commits the funniest turnovers on the field. And he also acts like a corny dipshit whenever the camera's on him.
Right. There's nothing there to like. Like, he's just... I mean, the thing that I always come back to with him is that he actually also isn't that good. That, like, all of that stuff would be the sort of thing... Like, we know, as people that have watched football, that, like, if he was winning games, all of that shit would be... in a different light. It would be overcoming adversity. It would be like a quirky guy whose teammates love him and whatever. But like, he's a fucking B-minus quarterback and a turd and clearly weirds everybody out.
Well, that's the thing, because the Bucks present it as he's a good quarterback. He's talented, which he is. He's talented. Sure. I'm not fucking stupid. And it's like, he comes to the facility every day at 5 a.m. He's a leader. He's a natural leader. Everyone gravitates toward him, and because they're with him, they naturally know him better than I do. Yeah. And yet it completely blinds him to all the horrible shit that he's done.
Right. To me, also, the leader thing is one of those, it's completely disprovable. And it's the sort of deal where, like, it's not the same thing. And I want to, like, slag Trubisky with this. But that's, like, been the story with him and the Bears for years, too, where they're just like, no, there's this secret sauce. Like, I know what you see is a guy throwing, like, fucking checkdowns and, like, never throwing the ball more than 6 yards down the field. But... like, you should see how much Paulo Coelho he reads. Like, there's, like, some secret thing that you... And you have to kind of take them at their word at some point. It's just that with Winston, it's so obviously false.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. It's just like someone can, you know, you shake hands with somebody or you play golf with them and you're like, hey, he's a nice guy. You don't really fucking know him, you know?
That's the Trump thing where everybody he's ever met that didn't instantly call him a buddy. He's like, great guy. Jeff Epstein, terrific.
Yep. Yeah. Completely. This is from Michael. This was, here's your yearly reminder that Warren Sapp is banned from all Best Buys. Which, by the way, I did a Google search to verify that. I don't even know if it's true, but I believe it to be true.
I mean, I have no reason to doubt it. I don't need to know exactly what the incident was. I did, speaking of Warren Sapp, I wanted to find the You Thinking Sex Now tweet.
Yeah, the dildo.
And I searched Google for it. So, like, somewhere in a server is just me searching, in quotes, You Thinking Sex Now. And it didn't show up because it was, I did it wrong. It was You Thinking Sex Now.
Yeah. Yeah. It was more, It was more casual, more informal.
Yeah. Like, I basically did, like English as a third language porn search, trying to find that tweet.
You know what? That's neither the first nor the last time the internet has had such an input.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure. Right. They've seen worse.
Let's go to your team, the Giants.
No, I don't think we should do that.
Who also, that's another one that wrote itself, because they, just the galactically awful offseason they had. Like, they had a bad season in which, you know, they basically spent most of their time fighting their own best player.
Yep.
But then when the offseason came and they finally offloaded him and then signed Golden Tate, who immediately got suspended after not being all that impressive when he was traded to the Eagles to begin with. And then Dave Gettleman just stomping around and being like, bah, 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 I've been in this business for years. I know what I'm doing.
Right. This is the classic executive maneuver of being like, I had a job 25 years ago. No, you can't knock that. A lot of the guys that you're in charge of weren't even born then. The thing with the Giants, one of the things that I hate the most about the Giants offseason is that it's that what you just identified. It's the combination of fucking up and then being super smug and proud about it.
Yes!
Which is kind of a Giants signature move, honestly. Like, that's like a core corporate value in the organization. But man, Gettleman patting himself on the back for drafting the fucking galoot from Duke and paying up for, like, basically giving Odell Beckham's salary to Golden Tate in his age 31 season. It's just like, that's some Giants shit.
Just some massive corn cobbing. Really, when I read the copy from Gettleman, it really does sound like Mike Lombardi was placed in charge of an NFL team again, where it's like, I won some championships, you know, when I was the third assistant payroll manager.
Right. I was going to say, like, showing everybody, like, that Tom Coughlin's, like, phone number is in his phone. He's like, so, yeah. I don't, you know, all right, so go ahead, disprove that.
This was from Todd, who wrote, I thought it was perfect. He said, of the Giants, this team is the never-Trump Republicans of the NFL.
I was hoping that you would mention that. I've been thinking about it since I read it. It's the most devastating and accurate assessment of the organization that I have ever encountered. And I would like to invite that guy to come take my job.
It's horrifically accurate. Yeah, it's terrifyingly accurate, and I get very sad thinking about it. But it is. It's just very, very patricianly and very stiff and going along with all the bad shit, but, you know, making sure, oh, let's all be civilized.
Yeah, right. Like, first of all, getting your ass kicked. Second of all, insisting on that you're doing it in a dignified way. And then third, not actually being dignified about it.
Like, Gettleman got rammed up the ass for drafting Daniel Jones, and he legitimately turned into Joe Biden, and he's like, it's just such so sad that we can't have civil discourse in society anymore. Like,
discourse police.
You manage the fucking New York Giants.
Just draft him in the third round if you want, you doofus. Like, nobody, it's not the sort of thing where you're like, the Twitter mob is coming for you or whatever. It's not like, God, it's not a PC police issue. It's like you drafted a guy that looks like Woody from Toy Story. That's the problem.
Jerry Reese won two Super Bowls, and Giants fans couldn't wait to get rid of him.
If only there was like an obvious visual reason why they would dislike Jerry Reese and give Div Gettleman the benefit of the doubt.
Yeah, unbelievable. Who could guess?
Whom among us, indeed?
Who could ascertain that contract?
Let's talk about another team.
Yeah, let's talk about another team when we get back. Right to the break. Right. Come right back.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
We're back. The team still sucks. And this team that we're going to get to that I did, the Jacksonville Jaguars.
Nice to see them back in this part of the why your team sucks continuum.
I don't know how, like, I think it started with Dan Patrick, but I don't know how Jaguar became a pronunciation that is, like, acceptable to people. It's so weird to me.
Yeah, that's a strange one. That's, like, the way that George W. Bush said nuclear enough times that I've, like, I, like, almost say it myself now.
A lot of people make that fuck up, though. That's a fairly common fuck up. And it's an almost understandable scrambling of the word.
I disagree. I don't see, there's an extra U in there that is not, like, you're adding letters. It's the same thing as Jaguars. You're just deciding to sort of swap some stuff out at the end of the
word. There's no I in Jaguar.
Yeah.
Unless it's Jalen Ramsey.
There. Oh, get him. Go off.
Oh, that's a good one.
But
it's
just
weird.
Think that's unfair because of his maturity now.
Yeah. I think that they should all, especially because the Jaguars are sort of, they have the strange Rays expos set up that the Rays want to have, where they go to London every year and they are the team of London, even though everyone in London's like, whoa.
Yeah. Sister city to London, Jacksonville, Florida.
So instead of saying Jaguar, I think they should say it like a British people. I think they should say Jaguar.
Jaguar. Yeah. They should have Jeremy Irons announce their games.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I would absolutely 100% watch a Jaguars game called by Jeremy Irons.
The Jaguars game is streaming on YouTube.
Yeah. That's part of the reason I like watching soccer now is because I like the British commenters because I'm a disgusting Anglophile and I want to hear Ian Dark say, oh, it's the last thing to happen.
Was it you that pointed out that every time a Wimbledon chair umpire says deuce, it just sounds like juice?
Yeah.
Love that shit.
It's true.
Juice.
Juice. You know,
someone hands him a Capri Sun. Anytime he's thirsty, you just ask for it. It's a great job.
Hamilton Nolan, the last thing I asked Hamno to say something about the Jaguars in his Hamno fashion, he said the Jaguars have already ruined the season by selecting a non-B quarterback, and therefore I fully expect a series of disasters. It's true.
Yep.
It's not just a non-B quarterback, but they had two BL quarterbacks in a row with Blaine and Blake, and now they have Nick Foles and his mighty penis quarterback in the joint.
I think Foles is going to be bad there, but I also think that he's going to, like, after, like, the Bortles experience last year, especially after it looked like he'd kind of put it together, like, last year was such peak bad Bortles that I feel like Foles is going to get a pass for at least, well, not for a whole year because football fans are crazy, but, I mean, like, it'll be a different and more competent type of being bad that I think will be much appreciated.
Yeah, like, if they go 7-9 and they are built to go 7-9, then people will be like, oh, all right, they're sort of maybe, they've got their act together enough to not be embarrassing, and it'll just be, like, the ceiling.
Yeah, I hadn't noticed until you pointed it out that they're doing that sort of, like, Giants-Beckham thing with Leonard Fournette, that they're basically just trying to haze him into, like, holding out or...
Yeah, they hate him! They drafted him fourth overall, and they fucking hate him.
And he's not even been bad. I mean, he's good when he plays. He's had injury issues or whatever. But the idea that they somehow think that an NFL player is, like, malingering or milking an injury, like, these are everyone in charge of that. I mean, it's literally Tom Coughlin. Like, the man is, like, 100,000 years old. He was there for the first football game ever played. He knows how people get hurt playing the sport. Like, why did you just suddenly forget that? Because, like, this guy's got, like, tattoos or, like, an earring with a diamond in it.
I just find it odd. I mean, I get, like, I've played football. I played the game.
Oh, really?
And, like, milking injuries is a thing that guys do. Like, some guys are always in the fucking training room because they like hanging out there and shooting the shit.
Yeah.
And flirting with, like, pretty trainers and stuff like that. But, like, it's Leonard Fournette. Like, he's not the guy who's going to do that just to do that. He didn't become a god at LSU. Because he hates football, or
he doesn't like being on the field. Yeah. Also, I didn't realize that the Carlos Hyde trade was that they, like, gave away a draft pick to, like, send a message to a guy that was probably like, okay, well, I'm really hurt, so I'm glad we have this other running back and don't have a fourth round pick now. Thank you for that.
And they don't have Carlos Hyde anymore.
I know.
Blues.
I mean, that's not the worst of their problems, but yeah.
Next, let's talk about the Detroit Lions.
The Loins.
Who are coached by just the... It's amazing and I noted this yesterday, but I really thought Matt Patricia would be a good and thoughtful and diligent head coach. And he just instantly became the same surly kind of ass bag that always comes out of Foxborough.
Yeah.
And on just this accelerated timetable of just completely alienating everybody in the building.
It seems like that's where they start. Like, that's like the opening position. That's like, well, first, like, I have to make everybody leave, and I'm going to need to get some stuff from the team store and, like, just drive a car over it a bunch of times and cut it up in weird ways. And then we'll be ready to start putting the roster together.
Yeah, they all think that it's their first day in prison and they have to knock out the toughest guy so that nobody fucks with them and, like ties them to, like, a sewer pipe or something like that.
Right.
It's not how it works.
No, like, you're not a gen pop man genius. You can relax. Like, try to do... It's a very difficult job, like, coaching a football team. I don't know how to do it. I don't even know what they do at the highest level. But I know that, like, there has to be more to it than antagonizing the media, like, just on principle.
Yeah, it's weird to me because, like, your job as a football coach is to coordinate 50 men and get them to all get on board with whatever you're doing and to willingly go out and play a game that's going to kill them when they're young.
Right.
And so it's weird to me that the fallback way of doing that is to walk in and be like, you guys are pussies and I'm going to show you.
Yeah.
I'm going to show you what a brave man does with a football team. Like it's the exact opposite of what you ought to be doing to get people aboard.
Every time that it's worked because other things were done properly. The idea that, like, and it's very NFL to me that people, like Tom Coughlin winning Super Bowls, like, it's not because of the thing where it's like, if you're 15 minutes early for the meeting, you're late. That wasn't it. You know, like, he did a decent job and he got lucky, but he's like, and he hired smart people and he let them do their jobs. Like,
and also, he was also, after he got ran out of Jacksonville because everyone got, you know, like, his act wore thin.
Yeah.
There were plenty of stories about how he's lightened up, and not in like these were puff pieces, but they were like, listen, he's still a surly prick, but at least he listens to people now.
Yeah.
Like that's they were willing to give him that. And like, you would think that lesson would be communicable even to Tom Coughlin himself, but
I think
Jacksonville.
People want to believe that, like, successful people that are also high-handed assholes. I think it's important for whatever reason for a certain type of sports-brained individual to believe that the high-handed asshole part is integral to the success. When I think it's often the sort of thing that, like, you know, it probably is not unrelated. Like, it's probably, you know, if somebody's exceptionally single-minded and confident and whatever, that's fine. But, like, the fact that he was a prick wasn't what made Michael Jordan Michael Jordan. You know what I mean? And then it seemed like there's this whole Kobe and stuff like that, like just being fucking weird and gross as like that's his way of emulating the thing that he thinks works. When really it's just a matter of like, you know, doing your job in a specific way.
Yeah, your coach is essentially your proxy as a fan. Like, I'm a fan. I watch the game. A player displeases me. And I'm like, fuck that guy. I get pissed. I'm like, motherfucker, you cost me money, you sack of shit. And so then if the coach is yelling at the guy, I'm like, exactly.
Right,
exactly.
Make him run.
Yeah. Make him do wind sprints till he pukes because he's been such a letdown and a shitbag. And so it's this weird dynamic that feeds off of itself where I want the coach to boss the players around because I want to boss the players around because that's my little Napoleon complex.
Yeah. I think that's...
And then the coaches are like, yeah, that's what works, and we should do that.
Right. I mean, I think that's like the NFL. It's weird, though, because it's at some point you have to choose between what you want more as a fan. Is like, do you want your team to win and do good, or do you want to, like, cut the punter? You know, like, you don't necessarily... But I think that, like, that's actually a question that a lot of fans would have to think about for longer than you'd think.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. A lot of them love, like, stern messages and the Keyshawning of various players and all that stuff. This is from Josh. This is a very depressing email. He said, Matt Stafford is the best QB we've ever had, but he hasn't won a single playoff game. Guys who have won playoff games in this decade include, and his list is Tim Tebow, Mark Sanchez, Case Keenum, Blake Bortles, and TJ Yates. He also, I will tell you that he had Flacco on that list, but I thought Flacco deserved to be taken off of the list, so I took Flacco off.
He doesn't belong on the list with TJ Yates, but that's
I don't think so.
Ugh.
Joe Flacco's better than T.J. Yates, but that is a sad, sad lot of quarterbacks. And it's more damning, in fact, of the NFL playoff system than it is of the Lions.
Oh, yeah. I mean, because you could add to that the list of guys that, like, people watched play in a playoff game or, like, almost won a playoff game. And it includes guys that were, like, are basically not fantasy ownable. Like, just, like, real junk.
Yeah, like Matt McGloin and shit like
that. Yeah.
It's so depressing when those people grace this TV screen in a playoff game. And you're like, I sat through 4 months of football and this is my reward. Matt McGloin starting a fucking playoff game.
On a Sunday afternoon. Like, I blocked out time for this. Not with my family. And I have to watch Matt McGloin, like, one hop a ball to Darius Hayward Bay.
Let's take a break and open up the fun bag.
Hey, I'm Jamie.
And I'm Justina.
And we're the hosts of Just So You Know, a podcast where we get to the bottom of suspicious stories and outright lies we're being told by companies that profit off of animals.
You think Elon Musk is shady? Wait till you hear our episode about his sinister brain experiments.
First he ruined Twitter, now he's coming for your actual brain.
No.
We've also got one about that time I stormed the runway at New York Fashion Week to protest Coach's leather handbags.
Yeah, I heard they weren't happy about that.
I couldn't tell you. They're not talking to me at the moment.
And we're just getting started. In the coming weeks, we're going to blow the lid off of everything from shady pet dealers to monkeys held hostage by coconut milk companies to the astonishing secret behind the no animals were harmed message you see at the end of movies.
And so much more. We'll hope you join us for this surprisingly fun journey full of strange characters, secretive companies, and a whole world of stuff they really don't want you to know.
Subscribe to Just So You Know wherever you get your podcasts and look for our new episodes every Thursday. Just So You Know is a PETA production.
We're back. It's time for some fun bag action. You ready, Roth?
Yes.
All right. I know. I already know the answer to this, but it's more fun to ask you a question when I already know the answer. It's from Eric. He says, what movies should absolutely be taboo for Hollywood to remake under any circumstances? I can only come up with a short list. His list is Jaws, the original Star Wars trilogy, the Indiana Jones movies, Godfather 1 and 2, Rocky 1 and 4, and Rocky Balboa. I'm going to take issue with that in just a second.
Yeah, for real.
And Gladiator, for some reason. So, I think they can remake Gladiator anytime.
Sure.
I think they essentially have already they've already rebooted Rocky via the Creed series. So
and successfully, I think Creed is like as good as Rocky or better. I really enjoy.
Yeah, Creed's a terrific movie. But so then, are there any of these? And they're going to make another. They're still talking about making a fifth Indiana Jones series and or movie, and then. I think the way that they were going to hand it off to Shia LaBeouf in Crystal Skull, which they never did, thank God.
Yeah.
But I'm sure that they will try to find a new Indiana Jones. Chris Pratt was once, my best friend Chris Pratt was once talking about.
Would you guys text about
Indiana
that?
Jones
or?
Yeah. But I don't think they're going to remake The Godfather. I think that's sick.
I don't think
but
they will either.
Wrong?
I think that that's the one that stands out too because it's like, it's an auteurist statement, right? Like that's like a great filmmaker's best or second best film. Like, so, you know, like, that's not the sort of thing where you then, like, kick that over to, like, Luc Besson and have him, like, run it back. I think maybe Jaws is similar because of the fact that it's Spielberg. Although it's honestly kind of surprising that, I guess they just, the way that you reboot Jaws now is you just make Jaws with different animals.
Yeah, or you make the Meg, you know? I mean, you make a shark movie.
We need a bigger shark. Yeah. The idea of... what's weird about all of the ones that, you know, and I think part of what makes them good is that there's like that like kind of funky 70s pacing that like Godfather's is crazy long. Jaws, you don't see the shark for so long in the film. There's even like Rocky, like the first Rocky is like.
It's boring.
Kind of, yeah, it's like this pokey, talky character thing. Like I rewatched it. When between seeing Creed and the sequel to Creed, And which I
believe, as one does.
Yeah, as one does. Just a normal thing to do. And it's like, it is. It's like 2 hours and 20 minutes. But like, that's how things were in the 70s. People were not in a rush. And they were also like, everybody was allowed to kind of like stretch out in this weird way. Like if you made Jaws now, like for one thing, you know, it would have to be much shorter. But like a lot of the stuff, like the local politics angle, like probably not a big part of it.
But it's a good part of it.
Yeah, it's a fantastic part of it. It's just like, that's part of why I think you have to leave it alone. If you're going to make an exploitation movie about like a big monstrous animal that eats people, like that's cool. Like if you do it right, I'll probably go see it. Or I won't go see it, but I'll watch it eventually.
Yeah, The Godfather is languid.
Yeah.
It's two especially. But in some ways, that pacing is what makes it more sort of hypnotic. Like it draws you in. And I think, like, they won't remake The Godfather as a film, I don't think. But I absolutely think they would make a TV show of The Godfather books.
Yeah.
Like, which on is, Amazon.
It's weird, too, because the movies are long as shit. They really didn't leave a lot out of the book. Like, I think the only thing that got... Because I read the book when I was young, like, in high school or something. And there's kind of a lot of sex in it. Like, more than there is in the movie. But I think like the only real subplot is that there's like a vaginal rejuvenation surgery in the book. And like that was the one thing where Coppola was like, you know, I don't know if we need that. Like I want to get this in under 3 hours and 5 minutes. So,
yeah.
But the rest of it's all fucking there, man.
Well, also that movie and the book, I believe, were written concurrently. Like I think they were developed at the same time. And so the book diverges from the movie in certain ways, and when Coppola handed the first cut of The Godfather, the film, to Robert Evans, Robert Evans said, baby, this is shit. Like, this doesn't make any goddamn sense, because it was like 4 hours long and just a mess. And so forced him to cut it down considerably, because every director gives them a five-hour cut in the beginning, like, oh, it's perfect.
Definitely in the 70s, too. That was also a weird... I know 2001, like, Arthur Clarke wrote that book with the movie.
Yeah.
Which is a weird thing, too, that, like, I don't think happens so much anymore, probably for the best.
Well, is it for the best? Those are two really good movies.
They are really good movies. It's just like, I don't know, do you need the books then?
I don't know that there is anything that is strictly taboo for Hollywood to... So sacrosanct that Hollywood wouldn't go and remake it. Like, Ben Affleck wanted to remake Casablanca. Like, even the Star Wars stuff, the original trilogy, I don't think Disney would have any problem redoing that shit at all.
I mean, honestly, like, if it's a matter of getting George Lucas's sign off, like, he'd do it all CGI. He doesn't give a shit.
Yeah, he didn't give a fuck.
Like, he'd do a half the voices and he'd, like, rename Han Solo to be, like, BJ Zap or whatever. He's just, like, I don't know. Like, he's got less respect for what he created than, like, literally everybody else.
Well, not only that, but what I hated about him constantly tinkering with stuff after the fact was he didn't get that once he put it out into the public, it didn't necessarily just belong to him anymore.
Right.
Like, you have to respect how the audience taking ownership of it, which, God, you should be so fucking lucky.
Right.
Right? And have some respect for that dynamic rather than just saying, no, it's still my movie and I'm going to make it perfect and you're going to like it the way you like it, 8 billion people who grew up watching it this exact way. Like, it's blind to me.
And so grandiose. I absolutely agree with you on that shit. Like, especially just with something like that that's already, you know, like, by the time he's adding, like, extra Jabba's the Hutt to, like, the whatever the re-releases and stuff like that, a whole generation has, like, you know, memorized that shit, made it, like, a part of who they are and what they care about, and, like, hopefully not too big a part, but, like, it opens the door to all kinds of other cool things. And then, like, to go back in there and be like, no, actually, that version is not the right version. Like, I got to make it mine. It's like Kanye constantly tinkering with that song.
A couple
years back. But it's just like, at some point, man, it's like, you got to just, like, let other people consume what you're putting out.
Yeah, I think if there's blockbuster potential in anything and the only social blowback is from, like, fanboys saying, like, yeah, you killed my childhood or whatever.
Yeah.
I don't think companies really give a shit about that. I think... Like, if you're going to go, like, it's really off limits, like, I think it would be essentially, like, Schindler's List.
Yeah.
And
well, right. Any, like, prestige things, like, and, like, Casablanca is definitely one of those ones, too, where, like, there'd be no reason to remake it. But the idea of, like, I think even now where like previously known IP and like name recognition and shit is like the most important thing this side of being part of the Marvel universe for like getting movies made. But I feel like there's like definitely a line. Like, it's weird to me that like Gus Van Sant got to do his weird fucking art project with Psycho, for instance.
Yeah.
Like, that would be the sort of thing where like just because people know that Psycho is like a classic movie or whatever, like there's no way that it could have improved or added anything to it. As it was, he got to do some, you know, like weird performance piece thing where you remake it shot by shot. But like,
did you watch it?
I saw bits of it. I had kind of an age thing. I'm not afraid to admit that. It's weird. You know, it's very stagey and stilted in the way that like kind of the original is too. But it's like, it's the same. You know, so it's like all these like contemporary, you know, like different sort of more naturalistic actors or whatever. But it's like, all of it just felt kind of uncanny, which I guess was probably the point. Like, it just didn't seem like something I should be watching.
I'm going through the list of all the all the best picture winners. Yeah. Because, by the way, and this is beside the point, but Schindler's List made a lot of money. Like, it was not. You know, it was not made for profit, but you're leaving it off limits, not necessarily because you don't think it'll make money, but for very obvious social
reasons. I was going to say that like the sequel possibilities, not a lot of like as a cinematic universe, I don't know, like the young version of Ralph Fiennes' character, I'm sure that there's some audience for that, but all of those people should be arrested. So yeah.
The last super big Best Picture winners were 12 Years a Slave. I just don't think that they'll remake that.
No.
Argo, which I don't think that they'll remake. Let's see. The King's Speech. Yeah, they probably remake that.
But with
Slumdog
whom?
Millionaire?
With like Eddie Redmayne or something? Like, why would you do it?
Just because.
Right. I don't know. Because people remember it from like before.
Here's one they won't ever remake. They're not going to remake No Country for Old Men. They're not going to remake any Coen Brothers movies, except they will make TV versions of it.
Yeah, that's like it's weird. I guess like True Grit's the sort of thing where like that'll get rebooted once a generation because like it's a great book, you know, it's like a cool story or whatever. And as long as they're making Westerns, it's like that's one that you would remake. But I think a lot of the like the classic films of like the 50s and 60s basically can't be remade without excising a bunch of like politics stuff that would make them unmakeable today.
Right.
Which is like, I mean, it's good, but I don't need to see like whatever fucking like Iñárritu's The Searchers or whatever.
But that's true. I think the other thing is that like I'm looking at the list now, and Goodfellas did not win Best Picture. It lost to Dances with Wolves infamously. They're not going to ever remake Goodfellas, but what they can do and what they are doing is make movies of essentially that fit into that pattern as Scorsese did with Casino years later.
Yeah.
And as he is going to do with The Irishman, which will be a Netflix movie. And so what you can do is you can remake those movies that are untouchable. You can essentially rebrand them and do different versions of it without saying that you fucked with the real deal.
What is weird to me is that, I mean, it's not weird, and I guess it makes sense, but that, like, the movies that I would like to see be remade are the ones that are, like, good concepts, but just kind of, like, dated or, like, mediocre execution. The one that's always been on my mind with that is, it's not a very good movie. They did remake it into a TV show. Do you ever see Alien Nation?
I saw the movie.
That's what I mean.
And was all weirded out by it. I never saw the TV show.
TV show was nothing to write home about. The movie's got a ton of really interesting shit in it. Like, I watched it just, like, by accident, showed up on Showtime a few years ago. Like, about immigration, about, like, sort of cultural engagement and, like, obsessions across, like, weird, you know, I want to say, like, Orientalism, but I never really fully understood that term. But, like, the idea of, like, exoticizing other cultures and stuff. There's a lot of really interesting stuff in there. It just also is so, like, 1988 and stupid.
Right.
That, like, I would love it if, like, somebody smart ran that back. But also, like, who's clamoring for that? Like, I would love to see, whatever, if, like, George Miller wanted to make Waterworld, I'd be into it, too. But, like, he doesn't have to. So why bother?
I just want to watch any movie where James Caan is just walking around looking at everything and being like, this is fucking shitty.
Yeah, it's so James Caan in that one, too. Like, it looks like he's wearing, like, the clothes that he wore to the set. Like, he showed up in, like, a satin, like, LA Rams, like, jacket, like, a starter logo on it. And they're like, all right, cool, don't take that off.
I'm going to give you the Trump question of the week and maybe another one if we have time. All right. This is from Jim. How many of these 7 acronyms do you think Donald Trump can accurately tell you what they stand for? Here they are. You ready?
Mm-hmm.
WTO, NATO, IMF, NAFTA, FBI, CIA, and NASA.
The last three. Oh, no. 2 of the last three. I think NASA, he's probably got National Air and Space, and then would, I guess he's guessing association instead NASA's, of administration. Like, that seems like how he would do it.
Yeah, the first A is aeronautics. Is that correct?
Oh, is it? All right.
I believe, well, now I have to look it up. NASA is the only one that I was like, can I get these? Because I knew WTO, World Trade Organization, North Atlantic Treaty Organization, International Monetary Fund, North Atlantic Free Trade Agreement, Federal Bureau of Investigations, Central Intelligence Agency. And then NASA, I stumbled on. I was like,
Like, I know the S is for spaceships.
Yeah.
I think that he could probably do FBI and CIA.
If National Aeronautics and Space Administration. Right. I thought it was association.
Yeah. I think it's generally, like, if there's an A, I think it's administration or agency. Like, those are just a little tip if anybody challenges you on this.
So you have him at 2. I think I might have him at 1.
Yeah.
I'm not sure he knows what CIA stands for.
That seems like the easiest one to me. And yet at the same time, like, sure, I have no problem believing that he wouldn't know that. I think if you were to ask, I mean, I could tell you exactly, like, the IMF is different from the World Bank, but I don't know how World Trade, like,
you do.
Yeah, I don't World know Trade Organization. Either. It's not my job to know that. It's my job to say mean things about John Gruden on a podcast.
One day, though, we'll hit up the World Bank. Yes.
Yeah. There you go.
Fly to fucking Davos and shit. That'd be great.
Yeah. Why your agency sucks. We're going to start a new series and really, really drag some people. But yeah, I think that, like, the thing that's important in this question, as with all Trump questions, like, who could teach him? How would he learn it? Like, it would have to be in a movie. That's why I think FBI and CIA have a chance.
And he would have to learn it from himself. Like, he would have to imagine what it stands for in his mind, and that's how he sources information.
I invented it, actually. I love it when he does shit like that, when he, like, just learns something that everybody else knows, and he's like, you know, did you guys, a lot of people don't know that there's a France. And everyone's like, oh, good point, sir.
I think he knows what 4 of those entities do. I think he knows what the FBI does. He knows what the CIA does. He knows what NASA does. And I think he knows what NAFTA is.
Yes.
Enough.
Well, he thinks it's a bad deal. And
yes,
I guess it is, but I mean, it's all like.
But he knows it's a deal, and he knows Mexico's involved somehow. So he's got some of the particulars, certainly not all of them.
I think
there's no way he knows what the fuck NATO actually does as he breaks it apart.
No. Yeah. It's like he thinks it's just like a thing that, like, you have to give money to, and then they take it and they buy, like, candy with it, and then you don't get candy.
Yeah.
And that's,
yeah.
He files the entire world into deals and non-deals, and I think he's, like, not interested. Like, the FBI, whatever that is, I don't know, it's probably good. They're cops. They're great. They love me. You hear them. Like, they come up to me. They're crying, thanking me. But then, like, but that's not a deal. And then all of the ones that have to do with money are, like, deals, and therefore, like, things that he can fix by going in there and being like, straighten this shit out to, like, whoever runs the International Monetary Fund.
This deal is bad. Make it good.
Make
and
it good.
Just storms
no out. One ever thought to do that before.
Andrew writes in, if Hillary Clinton could dunk a basketball in a regulation hoop, would she have won the election?
How nasty a dunk are we talking about?
He says not a nasty dunk. nothing posterizing, but still clearly. Yes, he did. Not an amazing dunk. Nothing posterizing, but still clearly a dunk. I do not think she would win the election.
I don't think she would win the election, but I think it would have made an amazing visual.
It would have gotten a nice Twitter run for like 24 hours. People like, whoa, my God, yes, queen. And then that would have been it.
The idea of her, like, in some sort of pantsuit, like, just a powerful pastel thing, saying something awkwardly to camera. like being like, this election will be a slam dunk if you go vote. And then she gets up there and just throws it down with two hands like Kenyon Martin. I think that would actually motivate some voters.
I want you to drive the lane to the polls. I think the people who hated Hillary Clinton were conditioned to hate her for decades. And so if they saw her dunking, they'd be like, well, she's a show off. You know, she's playing a sport favored by African Americans.
Yeah, that's right. It's flashy. Just, you know, what? Whatever happened to layups?
Yeah. So it's like, you failed man 101, Hillary.
It would have at least, I think, probably, classic Mark Schlereth, come on Deadcast. It would at least undercut the one weirdest thing about her, like conspiracy-wise during the last election, which was that she was secretly dying.
Yeah.
And I never understood what the angle was for that. Like, it's just a way to say something ugly about her, but they were like, she's got lupus and isn't telling anyone. And I was like, there's a lot of other things to make fun of, man.
Yeah, she like stumbled getting into a car, and people were like, oh my God, she has cancer.
That's proof.
Meanwhile, Trump eats like insulation on
right.
day.
Like, Trump, every day there's a video of Trump trying to drive a golf cart up a flight of stairs onto a private plane. Like, fucking relax.
This show is produced by our executive director of audio, Manana Mafidi. We featured music by Corbin Hayes. The episode was mixed by Jamie Collazo. If you got a question you want to send us, send a voice note or email to deadcast@deadspin.com or tweet us using the hashtag deadcast. You can also find us on Apple Podcasts, NPR One, wherever else you get your podcasts. And we'll see you next week, Roth.
Bye.
Bye.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.